supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
At mossacres.com.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Later on in the show, we will discuss one of the most successful so-called invasive plants in the Northeast, the ranunculus known as lesser celandine, or celandine, with beautiful buttercup-like flowers. It drives everybody crazy. We'll tell you what you can do, what you shouldn't do, and what your options are when we get to the question of the week. We're also going to talk to some Girl Scout leaders about a national program that has the girls greening up our national parks. Well, that's a lot to do, isn't it? We better get right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Rita, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Rita.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
And where is Rita Fine?
I'm calling from Norristown, Pennsylvania.
All right, what can we do for you?
I received a planter when my father passed away 8.5 years ago. And in the planter, it had two different kinds of plants. And this plant now has grown 9 feet tall. Of course, I replanted it. And it's 9 feet tall, and it's hitting my ceiling. And I don't know if I could cut the plant and if the top end would die and the bottom end, or if I should just leave it go and see what happens.
So this is a house plant. It's got a long stalk.
Yes, it almost looks like a corn stalk, actually.
Right. But I'm going to guess that the leaf structure doesn't go all the way down to the bottom of the plant anymore. Most of the leaves are at the top of the plant.
Well, actually, Mike, this one has them from top to bottom, and they're long, green, dark green, beautiful leaves.
Typically, these things don't get light from all sides, and as they grow, the new growth at the top is lush and green, but they often have a long, naked stalk that in a plant like yours can be 3-4 feet of just stalk, which is, you know, if you have the right kind of house plant set up, it's great because you put it behind stuff, and all people see is the top of the thing. And in the meantime, it's like a flagpole behind it. Your situation is very unusual, so you must be good.
I don't know, Mike. It's in a spot where it gets great sun. It's very content there. I'll never move it. Should I just leave it go, or should I snip the top off and hopefully it'll resprout?
You should not snip the top off. That's the only thing you should not do.
In
almost any plant like this, the tip is the growing point. It's the liveliest part of the plant. It's not like on a table you can take it off of and buy a foot.
Oh, no. This is on the ground.
Top to bottom.
I have a 9-foot ceiling, and it's already bent to the ceiling.
All right. So your big option, and I don't really recommend this because your plant is so full, is what's called air layering. I would want you to look this up really carefully and read a couple of articles from extension services and houseplant experts and universities. But essentially, this is typically done when the plant has a naked stem, so you'd have to undress it, which would be very painful. Don't follow my directions. I'll just walk you through the basics. You actually cut away a line of the bark, which would typically be deadly. You would cut it in a complete circle, and then you would immediately wrap this area in wet sphagnum moss, and then wrap some loose plastic around that, plastic that's going to hold moisture but breathe, and you would spray water in there every day. If you do this right, at some point, roots will grow into that sphagnum moss through the side of the plant. And at that point, you sever below that spot and you give up the bottom of the plant, but you have a new bottom. You have shortened the plant. That is how that is done for house plants.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate all your help.
Okay, well, thank you. It's good to hear that somebody did so well with one of these plants, and we wish you luck no matter what your decision.
Thank you.
All right, take care, Reed.
All right, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Ben, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm good, Ben. How are you?
I'm great.
And where is Ben great?
Ben is great in Yardley, PA.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, we're up here where things seem to be growing well.
Yeah, okay. So what can we do for you?
My wife and I, we purchased our first home, and it was a foreclosed property, and it was kind of sitting here unattended for about 3 years in a really nice neighborhood, but it stands out now like a sore thumb because it's the one that hasn't been looked after.
Right.
So naturally, our first step was to try and fix up the lawn. We're kind of having two issues, but they're interrelated. One is that there is just Pachysandra everywhere, and the other is that the lawn, you know, there's a lot of bare spots, and I'm trying to basically take back some of the lawn from the Pachysandra and also get the lawn to grow. And the only steps I've taken so far is about 2 weeks ago, we have a tractor. I bought a dethatcher and an aerator, so I dethatched first and then aerated. Planted seed, and I haven't seen much so far.
So,
and I'm
Ben,
wondering,
you have absolutely no clue, right?
Yeah.
First of all, I think we know that this lawn is heavily shaded, right?
Well, it's got portions that are definitely in the shade, but there's portions that have a lot of sun too.
That's unusual, and the Pachysandra is back towards the shady spots.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you this, but you've wasted all the time and money that you have invested. No, I mean, if you had gone to our website, like we always tell people, if you have a question, look in the archives, the A to Z archives. In spring and fall lawn care, you would have been warned that you can't sow a new lawn from seed in the north.
Oh.
The soil is too cold, and the grass, by definition, hates summer. So typically germination takes like 4 to 6 weeks. The grass loses all its vigor and then it burns up in the summer heat. The time to establish a new lawn here is August 15th to September 15th.
Ah, okay.
And you would not dethatch in the spring. Thatch? I thought you didn't have a lawn. How do you have thatch?
It was partially just me being overzealous.
Okay.
But there was a number, I mean, it's about an acre of a yard, and there's all sorts of sticks everywhere. So whatever it needed a raking, and basically that's what I did with the dethatcher.
Yeah. When did you move in?
Well, we actually moved in June.
Yeah. You missed the window to do it right away. But I always urge people who are moving into a new house, especially one that's been uncared for 3 years, you got more than enough to do.
Yeah.
The problem is, how big is this lawn?
The front lawn is about 3/4 of an acre. The backyard is about 1/4 of an acre.
Yeah. Yeah, your neighbors aren't going to like you this summer. You have to stop attacking it for a while. You have to put your guns back in the holster. And you have a lawnmower and everything?
Yes, yeah.
Make sure it cuts high. Make sure that you can get it to cut at 3 inches. And then whatever comes up, kiss it on the lips and thank it for coming up. And then just cut it high over the summer. Don't feed it. Don't do anything else to it. And then when we get to August 15th, I want you to start tearing up what you have out there.
Mm-hmm.
Level it out. Have a big load of compost or real high-quality screen topsoil delivered. Spread that an inch thick on top of the surface that you've tilled and cleaned. Level it again. Leveling the surface before you plant seed will make your future life so easy. It's ridiculous. You can't get an even cut on an uneven lawn. And then you could get a drop spreader to spread the seed, or you can just broadcast it by hand. But then don't make this stupid mistake of smothering it with hay or straw or anything like that. Just go over it lightly with a rake until most of the seed is covered by the soil or compost. Water it gently every morning and every evening. That time of year, with the soil temperature nice and high, this grass that laid out there for 6 weeks in the spring will be up and hopping in 5 days with all of its vigor. As soon as you see it come up, you stop watering in the evening, never water in the evening again. Continue watering every other morning if we don't get rain for a little bit to help it get established. Always cut it high, never cut it lower than 3 or 3.5 inches, and feed it in spring and fall, and it'll be your game to lose. But, you know, there's nothing you can do now. It's too big an area. Sod would be too expensive. It sounds like there wasn't a lot to destroy out there to begin with. The Pachysandra is going to be a bear to get out. Then maybe that's what you should dedicate yourself to this summer.
Okay. Do you have any suggested tricks for it? Because we already worked on one 20 by 20 bed that took about a day and a half to get the entire thing done.
You got to get the roots out. If you're pulling it, it's got to be pulled from wet soil. You got to get the roots. I would get a flame weeder, a simple propane-powered flame weeder, and just keep torching it all summer long when it's at its weakest.
All right. Yeah, that sounds great. Well, a lot of good advice here. So
yeah, so for the rest of the spring and the summer, you know, paint those rooms, fix up that kitchen. There's that broken toilet upstairs. It's running all the time, Ben. You know what you got to do.
Are you in our house now?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Mike.
All right, man. Good luck.
All right, have a good day.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and tell you about my upcoming Keystone State Tour. I'll appear at the first ever Allegheny Mountain Green Fest next Saturday, May 14th, at the University of Pittsburgh's Living Learning Center in Johnstown, PA. And I'll be at Goodell Gardens, just outside of Erie, PA, on July 23rd and 24th. But don't you go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with Girl Scouts greening the national parks, Lesser Celandine taking over the world, and of course, more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible with support from Seed Savers Exchange, whose 2011 Heirloom Seed Catalog, offering nearly 600 varieties, is now available. Learn more at seedsavers.org.
You're listening to WHYY-FM.
Jenkins Arboretum proudly supports WHYY. Jenkins Arboretum, a 46-acre garden located in Devon, is open to the public at no charge, 365 days a year, from 8 a.m. to sunset. Jenkins Arboretum is currently featuring an outdoor sculpture exhibition entitled Wind Through the Trees, with 49 sculptures in a botanical setting. Jenkins is also hosting a Mother's Day rhododendron and azalea flower show on Mother's Day, May 8th. Details at www.jenkinsarboretum.org.
The WHYY forecast, a mix of sun and clouds with a high around 71 degrees today. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 52. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 73 degrees. Monday, more sun with a high near 72. Tuesday, sunny with a high near 71. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high around 73. And Thursday, a chance of rain showers with a high around 72 degrees. It's 66 degrees in Center City at 1119. You're listening to WHYY-FM.
Moss Acres supports You Bet Your Garden. Moss is a low-maintenance solution for shady spots where grass doesn't like to grow. Moss Acres offers information and a variety of mosses online at mossacres.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we'll take a look at your options when the buttercup known as Lesser Celandine begins to invade your property and the nearby wetlands. We'll also take more of your fascinating phone calls. But first, we have a park ranger in the studio to tell us about a new program that has the Girl Scouts greening up our national historic parks. All right, well, now it is time to welcome our special guest. Holly Johnson is a park guide at the Independence National Historic Park, part of the National Park Service here in the Philadelphia area, and she is going to tell us about a very special Girl Scout program taking place at national parks across the country called First Bloom. Holly, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to be here.
Or should I call you Ranger Holly? Is that...
You can just call me Holly.
Okay. All right. Good. So tell us a little bit about this program. It is not just something that the Girl Scouts of Eastern Pennsylvania are doing. This is happening all across the country?
That's right, Mike. Independence National Historical Park is one of 24 national parks that, thanks to the National Park Foundation, are able to engage youth groups in gardening projects that promote conservation, stewardship, national parks, and native plants.
And it's funny because this is counterintuitive to me. When I think about national parks like Yosemite, I think of people being told not to plant anything or do anything. Please don't change it any more than people already have in the past. So how do you keep the integrity of these national treasures and have these programs that I believe are on site, right?
That's right. It's encouraged that each park select an area on site within the park. A lot of parks choose to use areas around their visitor centers or previously established planting beds to plant gardens so that they don't disrupt the natural environment of the park itself.
And so you're helping out, you're monitoring the program here in Philadelphia?
That's right. At Independence National Historical Park, we are working in our third year with Girl Scouts of Eastern Pennsylvania. This year, we are working with several troops from West Philadelphia. I've helped them select plants, all native to Pennsylvania, and I've showed them ways of going about designing a successful garden within the park. We're using pre-established planting beds, which we have many of around our historical buildings, and we hope to add to the landscape here.
So what are they going to do?
Well, the girls are really interested in selecting plants that will attract pollinators. So at Independence National Historical Park, we have decided to create a wildlife garden using native plants that pollinators such as butterflies and honeybees would like.
I'm going to correct you there because honeybees are not native. Honeybees are an imported species, and the only way you're going to get any honeybees at Independence Hall is if somebody in the community garden has a beehive. But I will take this opportunity to remind people that while they talk about native plants, one of my favorite native elements of our area is the proliferation of native bees. Those are the bees that are going to come to your park in large numbers and have a very diverse community. The honeybees get all the ink. They get all the headlines, and it's, you know, native plants. They are going to bring in native bees. And as a side thing, if you want to do something doubly cool, identify the native bees that come to your native plants here in the heart of the historical area of a major urban northeastern city.
Thanks for that, Mike. I think we have some more work ahead.
Well, we all do. So what are some of the plants?
We are using a variety of perennials and shrubs, such as smooth aster, butterfly milkweed, black chokeberry, New Jersey tea root, lance leaf coreopsis, which is one of my favorites, two types of bee balm, and I believe we're even going to throw in an Atlantic white cedar.
Okay, very good. And they're going to plant this garden, I believe, on May 14th, May 15th, something like that?
May 14th, Saturday, May 14th.
And did you have a personal interest in this? Were you a Girl Scout? Or were you a troop leader or anything like that?
I was never a Girl Scout.
Never, huh?
No, I feel like I've been given a second chance to get involved in the Girl Scout program.
Because obviously we're on the radio right now, but your uniform as a park ranger is very homogenous with the Girl Scout style of dress.
That's right, and I like to think that I serve as a role model to these Girl Scouts. We hope that the Girl Scouts will look to the National Park Service as a potential career opportunity.
Do you know what the other parks are doing to involve people in their communities to know about this and be a part of it?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Mike, because right now there is a nationwide contest by the National Park Foundation, a garden design contest that each First Bloom park is involved with. Listeners nationwide can go to the First Bloom website and vote for their favorite garden design now until May 16th.
What do the girls win who designed the best garden out of, is it 24?
Yes, the girls will win an opportunity to meet with leaders of the National Park Service. Last year, Fort Smith National Historic Site in Arkansas won an all-expenses-paid trip to Washington, D.C., where they could tour the National Mall, see the National Park sites, and meet with leaders of the National Park Service at our headquarters.
Now we're talking. Now I'm going to get in there and pull some weeds in the middle of the night. You know?
Yay!
All right, so we want everybody to go to the First Bloom website and vote by May 16th. Look at all the designs. Vote for their favorites. And beforehand, you were saying they can also vote through the Independence National Historic Park website, right?
That's right. There is a link on our website. It's through our For Kids page, which you'll find on the left side of the Independence National Historical Park website.
Is there any limit on how often you can vote?
Once a day.
Once a day. And I don't imagine the people who vote will get anything other than the satisfaction of maybe sending their local group of kids to a great trip somewhere.
Actually, there is an incentive for your listeners to vote. Each time you vote, you have the option to enter your email address, and your email address will enter you into a raffle. The winner of the raffle gets a prize from the National Park Foundation.
Okay, that's great. All right. Thank you very much. Holly Johnson is a park guide at the Independence National Historic Park right here in the heart of Philadelphia. She was telling us about the national program called First Bloom happening at national parks around the country. So go to the First Bloom website. Go to the Independence National Historic Park website. No matter where you live, vote for us. Vote for our Girl Scouts planting this nice garden here. I guarantee you vote for our Girl Scouts. You're from out of town. You'll win a prize. Okay, we'll set things up. All right, Holly, thanks very much for coming in to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me in. Vote for independence.
And now back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Christina, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Christina. How are you?
I'm great.
And where are you great?
I am in Wilmington, Delaware.
All right. Very good. What can we do for Christina in Wilmington?
Well, I have a fig tree, and my mother gave it to me. It'll be 3 years this summer. And I live in town, so our yard is really tiny. It's about, I don't know, like a 20 by 20 little box.
Right.
And, you know, we have grass in the center and a little garden around the edge. And I've been wanting to plant it in the ground, and it's been in a container this whole time. And last weekend, my husband and I were listening to your radio program, and you were discussing, at least at one point, containers and possibly putting greens and certain vegetables. And he was saying, see, I told you, it's better in a container than in the ground. But it's really sad in the container. I mean, it's not growing that much. It has maybe a handful of fruits a year. And I don't know. I think it'll be better in the ground. And I was hoping you could help us out to tell us what, where it will do its best.
Now, Christina,
and have the best fruit.
Now, Christina, does this thing stay outside all winter?
Yeah.
And it's not dead yet?
Well, no. We've kind of, you know, moved it against the house and covered it because it's been in a container.
Okay.
But,
right.
You know, some of our neighbors, because there are lots of Italians in the neighborhood, they have always been successful with putting it close to the house or close to a wall. So I'm hoping if we plant it in the dirt, that would happen to us as well.
Well, as is always the case, or almost always, 96.7% of the time, I believe, is the true scientific finding.
Whoa.
Of course the wife is right and the husband is wrong. Why would you even think twice about that? He was hearing me talk about annual plants, things that you typically buy in the spring at a garden center, grow throughout the summer, and then toss at the end of the season. This is a long-lived perennial and a fruiting tree. Now, you guys are very lucky that it's not dead yet.
Well, that's one of his things. He's saying if it's in a container, if we have a really bad cold, he could always move it. Like right now, he moves it against the house and covers it. And if we put it in the dirt, he said he's thinking that it will die.
No. The odds are the other way, of course. What you want to do is you want to plant it in the ground. It does want to be planted in a protected area. But for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with the Delaware area, Delaware is a little south of Philadelphia, so you're already moving in the right direction for a Mediterranean plant. You said you're in the middle of the city, and even a city the size of Wilmington is going to be a heat sink that's going to stay warmer than the outlying areas, say even in Odessa, which is south of you. So plant it in a protected spot close to the side of the house in the ground. It will thrive. It will produce figs for you. You'll still want to do some protection over the winter, but getting those roots below the soil line is going to make that tree so much happier.
Will it produce more fruit?
Absolutely.
Aha, that was the big thing. Okay. Now, is there any kind of directional wind that I have to worry about or something, or does that not even matter?
You really want it to be protected from any wind. It is the winds in winter that whip these things. What you want to do when the time comes to settle it down, don't take anything off of it. Wrap it up with breathable material like row cover or sheer curtains. And then forget about it for the winter. If it's in the right spot, it'll do fine. And then take the wrappings off in the spring. And then do any pruning to remove winter-damaged parts. And you will have a much happier tree, and I virtually guarantee many, many more figs.
Okay, so I should prune now, basically.
If there are winter-damaged areas.
Gotcha.
You don't need to prune anything healthy on these things.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Yeah, thank you.
All right, good luck.
Now we'll have delicious figs.
Yeah. All right, good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Margie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Margie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How you doing?
I am doing very well, thank you. Where are you?
In Dayton, Ohio.
Very good. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm getting overrun by poison ivy, and I'd like to get rid of it and not use any chemicals, but I'm getting a little desperate. So what do you suggest?
That you not be desperate. Chemicals do not work on poison ivy.
Okay.
I mean, the herbicides that are very dangerous to you and your family and the environment will kill the living plant. But that's where most people go wrong and wind up in the emergency room, sometimes on IV steroids to help them breathe, because the dead plant still has all the uracil oil. The dead plants are still allergenic.
I'm allergic to it, so I'm out there with what looks like a hazmat suit, basically covered head to toe.
You have not read our online articles about poison ivy.
I have not.
I have a patented method for poison ivy removal that I developed about 20 years ago. You take all those plastic shopping bags you've been saving in a closet somewhere in your house, and either right after or even better, during a rain, you go out to the yard with a helper and a rolling trash can. You don't try to do it all in one shot. You do an hour to pop.
Okay.
You slide a plastic bag over one hand, slide a plastic bag over the other hand. Reaching down, you grasp the plant at the base and pull gently and slowly. If the soil is wet enough, sometimes people just can't wait for the rain and they go out and soak the soil for hours. If the soil is wet enough, the entire root will come up. And it may travel underground for a while. You may be getting massive amounts of root system. Mm-hmm. When you finally get that individual plant out, use the plastic bag on the other hand to close over the ivy and the bag, and then throw both bags and the ivy in the trash can. Get fresh bags and move on. And if you want some extra protection for yourself, if you're extremely sensitive to this uracil oil,
I am.
Get a product called Ivy Block. It is a liquid clay film you put on the exposed areas of your body. It was developed to protect firefighters from poison ivy when they're fighting forest fires. Highly effective. physical barrier, you just wash it off. If despite all this, you have some kind of an accident and wind up touching a piece of the plant, just go and immediately wash that part of your body with cold water. I was faced with a land that was totally covered with poison ivy, and I thought it was going to take me forever. And it wound up taking me like 3 or 4 afternoons of an hour a pop. And it was
really were you able to eradicate it?
Absolutely. There's always going to be
hope. There's hope then.
There's always going to be new plants coming up because poison ivy forms berries in the fall. And birds can eat the berries and do eat the berries. They don't get poison ivy from it. And then when they poop out the berries a couple of miles away, sitting on your gutters or in one of your trees, they're planting another poison ivy plant that'll come up the following spring. So just learn to recognize it. It's very easy to pull these things from wet soil when they're young.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, you take care.
Bye, you too. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everyone anxious to get their plants in the ground that summer favorites like tomatoes, peppers, cukes, squash, and melons can be damaged by temperatures that drop below 40 and prefer being planted when nights are mostly in the 50s. So if evening temps are predicted to be chilly, take the plants out for some sun during the day, but keep them in their containers and bring them back in at night until things warm up. But don't you go checking that 10-day forecast just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your phone calls and a close look at the pretty little buttercup known as Lesser Celandine. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible with support from Seed Savers Exchange, whose 2011 Heirloom Seed Catalog, offering nearly 600 varieties, is now available. Learn more at seedsavers.org.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. There's still time to catch my talk at 2 p.m. today, Saturday, May 7th, at the Green Fair at the Karen Chair Shops in Souderton, PA. And there's lots of plant sales today. At Rutgers Earth Center in South Brunswick, New Jersey until 5. At the Lawrence Nature Center on Drexel Avenue in Lawrence Township, New Jersey, also until 5. The Martha Washington Garden Club will hold its annual sale at the Masonic Hall on Edgewood Road in Yardley till 2. And the Brandywine Conservancy will host its 30th annual wildflower, native plant, and seed sale until 4 today and tomorrow from 9 to 4. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
You're listening to WHYY-FM. The WHYY forecast, a mix of sun and clouds today with a high around 71 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 52. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 73 degrees. It's 69 degrees in Wilmington and 67 degrees in Center City at 1139. This is WHYY.
The Oriental Rug Room at 10,000 Villages in Ephrata supports WHYY, featuring an Oriental Rug event Friday, May 13th and Saturday, May 14th in honor of World Fair Trade Day. Inventory online at rugs.10000villages.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. And if you're looking out your window and seeing a sea of yellow, ephemeral yellow that comes up in the spring and gets more massive every year, you'll be very interested in our little discussion of Lesser Celandine, one of the so-called invasive plants that really is spreading fast, especially in wet areas. We'll tell you what your options are after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Matt, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm well, and I'm in Chicago, Illinois.
Well, of course you are. What a great town. I love Chicago.
Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it. Do you go to the ball games?
I'm a diehard and long-suffering Cubs fan.
All right. I got to see the Phillies play against the Cubs at Wrigley Field in the late 90s. and it was my first time inside the stadium. And when I walked inside, I felt like I should genuflect. I felt like I was in the Sistine Chapel of baseball.
It's amazing, yeah. Great.
All right, what can we do for Matt in Chi-Town?
The city of Chicago is graciously providing homeowners with free trees for the parkways, that little strip of land between sidewalk and the street. And about a year and a half ago, they installed two trees. One was a honey locust, and I believe the other one was an aspen.
Right.
And like all of their plantings, they heaped up piles of mulch around the trees. And I've been listening to your show for a year and a half or so, and this spring I snuck out there when no one was looking and pulled away all the mulch and replaced it with some compost.
Excellent.
And about a week later, it was all replaced with mulch again. My question was, you know, these trees are so close to the street. I didn't know if the city was doing it to protect the tree from salt in the winter and or cars and traffic in the summer, or if there was another reason they were doing it.
Yes, there is another reason. They are maroons. They are stupid in the head. They don't know what they're doing. They are following the leader as the leader marches off a cliff, and they are gloriously going behind him. It's monkey see, monkey do. I'd like to find the guy who started this stupid trend of decorative volcano mulching because he thought it looked good. And just, I won't even say on the air what I would do to him. He's responsible for the premature deaths of millions and millions of trees. It's absolutely heartbreaking. There is no horticultural reason whatsoever to mound mulch up against the trunk of a tree. And anybody who wants to try and defend it, we take a walk in the woods. They show me one tree out of the millions that God or nature has wrapped in a blankie around its tootsies, and I'll stop saying this. But in nature, you always see the root flare of trees. It's always dramatically exposed. You see that beautiful sculpture. There is absolutely no good reason to touch a tree with any mulch. And once you touch the tree, the clock starts ticking. Once you surround the base of a tree with mulch, especially in a climate like Chicago, where it's very wet over the winter, you are inviting rot and disease because that bark needs to breathe. It's the only part of the tree that's really alive, taking nutrients from the roots up to the canopy. It causes rot, it causes decay, and it lets mice and voles eat the tender bark, which they love to do of young trees, without being exposed to predators. If you were to do research, how can we kill these trees the most quickly without actually chainsawing them down? We would spread mulch around them. So I want you all to get up out of your chairs. Go to your windows, throw your windows open, and say you're mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore. You could be the first of a wave of heroes, Matt. I want you to get out there. You don't have to take it away or replace it with compost. You need to just hoe it away from the base of the trees until it's not touching the trunk anymore. And then here's what I'm going to suggest. You know how you see all these little signs and there's these stores that make up, you know, like 100 signs for a small amount of money that you just stick in the ground? I want you to invent an organization. Make it sound really official. The Illinois Association for Botany, the American Tree Planting League, and put these next to it. And have on the main sign will say, do not mulch this tree. And then have some official organization underneath that. And every tree you free, you put this little sign in the ground. What do you say? You with
me? I like it.
And I want you to wear a cape and a mask.
I'll send you a picture.
I will strap on my jetpack and I will get there if they take you. I'll bust you out.
All right, Mike. Thanks for your help.
All right, Matt. Good luck, man.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. How are you?
I'm fine, but I have two very major problems with my lawn.
I have a question for you first.
Okay.
Where are you?
Harleysville, Pennsylvania.
Okay. So what's wrong with your lawn, Mayor?
It's the front lawn is in full sun, and it is very clumpy. do I have to tear the whole lawn up, or can I just put topsoil down where the bare spots are and reseed it in the fall?
Well, a lawn in sun typically repairs its own bare spots if it's treated halfway different. You said clumpy and you said bare spots. One to me signifies a way uneven lawn with hills and valleys, and the other signifies bare spots. What are we talking about?
I think we're talking about both.
Does this lawn get a lot of abuse?
No, it doesn't. It's the soil probably is not the best, but it's on a little bit of a hill. It's a grade, not really a hill.
Okay,
and sometimes I've tried using lawn services, sometimes I've tried myself, and both ways, it's always bare spots.
Okay. When you take care of the lawn, what do you cut it with?
A power mower.
And how high do you have it set?
It's the highest setting it can go.
Okay. Have you ever measured the lawn after you're done cutting it?
No.
Okay. If that highest setting doesn't give you a 3-inch cut, you need a new lawn mower. Now, do you feed the lawn?
Yeah.
When?
With Scotts. I don't know what's in it, though.
Okay. Well, a chemical-fed lawn is never going to look good. The people who sell you these products only want you to buy more products. If you have a good-looking lawn, they lose you as a customer. So I presume you've already put down some sort of weed and feed for the spring?
Yes.
But it was regular weed and feed. It wasn't corn gluten meal or anything.
Right.
You know, those things are really toxic and dangerous. They are far from harmless, and especially because we hear the baby in the background, these small children are the most vulnerable to these products. So whatever you do, don't feed it in summer. That burns up the lawn.
Okay.
And just cut it high. Make sure you're cutting it at the highest setting. Have you ever gotten a new blade or sharpened the blade?
Yes, we have.
Okay, so you do that every year?
Uh-huh.
That's good. Don't give it any more food. Don't give it any more chemicals. Whatever you do, don't water it every day. If you water it at all, water it deeply once a week. If we're in the middle of a dry heat wave, wait till the heat wave breaks to cut it. I don't care if it gets a little too high. And then, if by the time we get to August 15th, it still doesn't look good, that would be the time to have it torn up, leveled, and reseeded. And after that, it would be really your game to lose.
Okay. Now, my second question. I have a lot of nut grass. How can I get rid of that?
You can't. I mean,
you can't?
Yeah. No, you're just going to have to cut high this summer. You will have to have the lawn torn up and all this stuff raked out and carefully removed. And then you need to put down a layer of like 2 inches of topsoil or 2 inches of real premium compost and sow your new lawn in that. Nutgrass, nut sedge propagates by every known method. It spreads, it drops seeds. It's almost impossible to treat once it gets established. But it's there because the lawn has had these chemicals applied to it, which has made the lawn weak, especially any summer feedings. Anytime you feed a cool season grass in the summertime, you guarantee you're going to burn it up and let weeds take over. So just tolerate it over the summer, cut it high, renovate it completely between August 15th and September 15th, and then after that, no more chemicals, get on a natural lawn care program, and in the sun, it really is your game to lose. There's no excuse to have weed infestations in a lawn in the sun. It shows the stuff you're using to care for the grass is actually harming it. All right, Mayor?
Well, thank you very much.
All right, good luck to you.
Uh-huh, bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Lesser celandine. For some, it's a bitter buttercup. Elsa in Bethlehem gets us started by writing, "We're in the process of restoring a Lehigh riverbank with native plants. But the over 2,000 beautiful spring natives we've put in are being choked by a thick blanket of lesser celandine that flourishes during the peak bloom of such natives as Dutchman's breeches, Virginia bluebells, trillium, and trout lilies. It was recommended that we use Roundup in February before the natives come up. I understand that the glyphosate in the Roundup is not severely evil. However, the size of our area would require a major grant to purchase the amount we'd need. Pulling is tricky, as the celandine produces little tubers along its roots that can stay behind. What are your thoughts on this? Literally hundreds of acres are affected. Well, when tested by University of Pittsburgh researcher Dr. Rick Relia, the active ingredient in the herbicide Roundup, glyphosate, was found to be relatively innocuous to the amphibians he studies. But in real life, the active ingredient in these things is never used alone. And when Dr. Relia used actual Roundup he purchased at retail, it wiped out massive numbers of frogs, toads, and other amphibians. The surfactants and other so-called inert ingredients appear to be far from inert or innocuous. Luckily, Roundup is not approved for use near water, and I doubt anybody's going to invite federal prosecution by writing you that big grant check. And come on, hundreds of acres? Removal of such a large number of plants along a riverbank in any manner would lead to severe environmental devastation. And for what? To be able to risk replacing a plant that produces pretty yellow buttercup-like flowers and does a magnificent job of preventing erosion with different plants that thrived in a different era and may no longer have what it takes to compete in a world that's been dramatically changed by the presence of humans? Nature doesn't favor natives or so-called invaders. Nature simply provides a canvas and the rules of Darwin decide the winners. It's not the same river as when those other plants first flourished. Human activity has changed everything about it and the area around it. The best I can suggest is that you establish a nearby area that you can protect with deep edging in which to show off your natives. Any attempts to remove that much celandine will be expensive, time-consuming, immensely destructive to the environment, and run a high risk of failure. But you might be able to get it out of some small areas to help establish that refuge without causing too much damage. There's a new class of alternative broadleaf herbicide that uses iron as its active ingredient, and it's labeled for use on this specific plant, which they call creeping buttercup. Just go slowly and try and keep it away from the water, as all herbicides contain some type of surfactant. At least iron isn't a hormonal disruptor, like the active ingredient of many of the chemical herbicides. And smothering the plants with wood ash is an ancient tactic I found suggested in the Lesser Celandine article at a wonderful modern herbal website called botanical.com. This might be another nice experiment for a small area, but please don't mess with it right near the river. Lesser celandine is virtually invulnerable in wet areas, and the erosion you'd cause trying to get it out would be immense. We move on to Jen in southeastern Pennsylvania, who writes, "We have a twofold invasion of lesser celandine in my planting beds and throughout our new lawn. There's so much in the lawn that we can't spray to get rid of it. It would kill the lawn, too. Thanks for any advice." Well, Jen, first you should test your lawn soil. If the pH is low, add wood ashes to raise it up to neutral and go heavy on the ashes over top of the areas that have a lot of lesser celandine. Try one of the iron-based herbicides in a few areas as well. And then care for the lawn correctly. Never cut it below 3 inches. Never cut it during a dry heat wave. And feed it only in the spring and fall. And as celandine craves moisture, make sure you're not overwatering that lawn. If we don't get rain, water deeply, but only once a week. If you see you're making some headway, then aerate the turf this fall to improve the drainage. But if your lawn is always wet, you'll have to install drain tiles and start over to keep the celandine out. Dig it out of your flower beds relentlessly. Be persistent. Get those below-ground tubers, and be sure to get it out early in the season before it drops little seed-like things that also grow new plants, just like the underground tubers. To quote that modern herbal website, in the early summer, when the leaves and stems are dying down, grains drop to the ground, each capable of producing a new plant. Then cover any bare ground in those flower beds well with shredded leaves or some other type of non-wood mulch, and install deep edging to keep the celandine out. And again, Don't overwater. And please, dear listeners, don't go trying to wipe this plant out everywhere you see it because it's on some hit list. It's not going to go away. It stabilizes wetland areas brilliantly, and the buttercup-like flowers are breathtaking in the spring. They've inspired literary tributes by the likes of C.S. Lewis, Tolkien, D.H. Lawrence, and most famously, the poet Wordsworth, who wrote, "Pansies, lilies, kingcups, daisies, let them live upon their praises. There's a flower that shall be mine. 'Tis the little celandine." Well, that sure was some interesting and almost certain to be controversial information about lesser celandine, now wasn't it? Luckily for yous, the print version of this and every question of the week appears at the Gardens Alive website. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to smother me with ashes if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live, put the actual subject in the subject line, and check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, where maybe it's been for years, just waiting for you to look it up. It's at youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our alphabetized archive of garden answers. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin Love Train Griffin. Our webmasters are Richard the Lionhearted Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our buttercup of an intern is Jessica Mandick. Spring blooming Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our editor is the escaped ornamental Al Banks. I'm clearly invasive Mike McGrath, and I'll push everything else out of the way so I can see you next week. The amazing cicada-killing wasp strikes fear into the hearts of many homeowners and cicadas. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll take a close look at this remarkable predator, plus your fabulous phone calls.
Next week at 11 o'clock on WHYY.